wherever we are picking up our We Belong series today. Throughout the fall, we're talking about belonging, that we have been welcomed by God because we have a welcoming God. That's what it means to love, that God welcomes us into the divine life and the life of Jesus. But not only that, to enter into this kind of life and to enter into the welcome of God is to belong to. That doesn't mean we're owned by God or other people or by the creation, but that we are inextricably linked to God, to other people, and to the creation in which we live. And so much of that is veiled for us because we live in such a radically individualistic culture. And so whether it is because of that individualism or shame or rejection or trauma that you've experienced, all of those things get in the way of our sense of belonging. And we wonder, where do I belong? What does it even mean for me to belong? And I want to tell you that this can sound like a trite answer, but no matter what has happened to you, no matter what you've done, no matter what the trajectory of your life has been, you do belong to and with God. You belong in love, which is the force that created this universe and to which we are heading ultimately into eternity. You belong, and I hope you feel this, that you belong in the church. We are trying to be a community, not just Point Place UCC, but the other churches in Point Place and the church throughout the world. We are trying to be a reflection of the welcome that God shares with us. But there is another side to all of this. I shouldn't say but there is another side to all of this. There is, for some of us, our experience is that we're afraid of imposing on other people. This is the first kind of belonging that we need to discover, that we're afraid of imposing. It's almost like we're afraid to knock on the door because we're not sure if we should be let in, and all of those things get in the way. And so we miss out on belonging because we're afraid that we shouldn't be there. But there's a number two to this. And if you will, instead of picturing someone who's afraid to knock on the door, picture a stranger bursting through your door, spitting on the floor as he strides through your house, flops his muddy boots up on the table, or deck shoes as it may be, and says, "When do we eat?" That's another end of the spectrum of belonging that I want to talk about today. Because it's a kind of belonging that has been, I would say, too prevalent throughout church history. And so we want to spend some time with that kind of belonging today. And what do we really mean when we say we belong? And we're turning now to Romans, Paul's letter to the Romans. And we're going to be looking at some chapters that can be confusing, but we're going to, I hope you'll see where we're going with this. Because in the New Testament, the Jews and Gentiles were struggling for where do they fit in this new community called the church. The Jews, of course, were, Jesus was a Jew, and Jesus drew on the promises that God had made to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all of the ancestors of the Israelite people. The Gentiles were really anyone who wasn't a Jew during that time. And they're just scuffling to figure out, where do we stand in this community? These were not communities that really overlapped intentionally. They didn't overlap much before. And so for some of these people, it's the first time they've really been in community with Gentiles or with Jews, the opposite of where they're coming from. And some of the history behind the letter to the Romans is that sometime between about 43 and 54 AD, there was a time where the Emperor Claudius actually kicked the Jews, all Jews, out of Rome. It was illegal to be Jewish in Rome at this time. And some of that is because some of the conflicts within the Jewish community between those who were followers of Jesus and believed that Jesus was raised from the dead and those who didn't. And so Claudius kicks out all of the Jews, whether they were followers of Jesus or not. Says, you're get out of Rome. And in that time, the church in Rome becomes, as you can imagine, predominantly Gentile. It's non-Jews who are leading the church, simply because the Jews weren't allowed to be in Rome. But soon enough, the Jews come back. And when that happens, there is this power struggle that we see happening behind Paul's letter to the Romans. It's a struggle for power, but it's also a struggle for fellowship of who's in charge here, who makes the rules, what kind of community are we? And you have the Gentiles who have, and the Romans in particular, who have this kind of social privilege. They're used to be the ones being in charge. The Romans had an empire. And so if you were a Roman citizen, in particular, if you lived in Rome, you were pretty much, this was your culture, and you were kind of used to getting your way. Then the Jews come back and they're saying, well, wait a second, you may have that social privilege, but we have a kind of religious privilege. You know, we're the ones, you know, who, Jesus was one of us, right? And we're the ones who are kind of the leaders of this movement, the 12 apostles. We're Jewish, and we're the chosen people, darn it. And so really, Paul is writing this letter into this context. And in the first three chapters, Paul essentially shuts everyone down, in a sense. That's a very simplistic way of reading chapters 1 through 3, But Paul says, look, none of you have a right to power. That's not what this is about. All of you are sinners saved by grace. All of you are dependent on the mercy of God to even be here at all. But there's another set of chapters, 3 chapters, 9 through 11, which many of us just skip over because it can be super confusing. It is a deep dive, a deep theological dive. But it's so important. And actually, I've heard one scholar recently call it really the centerpiece of the New Testament, because so much of the New Testament, and the New Testament letters in particular, are about this. How do we work in this new Jew-Gentile community centered on Jesus? He calls these three chapters in Romans the centerpiece, or the theological high point of the New Testament. And we're going to read, I know this is going to be rough because we're just taking 8 verses, somewhat out of context, but we're going to read from Romans chapter 11, verses 13 through 20. This is what Paul writes. Now, I am speaking to you Gentiles. And now, I'm going to stop there because I imagine most of us watching this video are Gentiles. We're not Jewish of heritage, of ancestry, of ethnicity, none of that. So, now I'm speaking to you Gentiles. Inasmuch then as I am an apostle to the Gentiles, I should also note, Paul was a Jew. That's important to know too, right? I glorify my ministry in order to make my own people, the Jewish people, jealous, and thus save some of them. For if their rejection is the reconciliation of the world, what will their acceptance be but life from the dead? If the part of the dough offered as first fruits is holy, then the whole batch is holy. And if the root is holy, then the branches are also holy. He's again talking about the Jewish people. But if some of the branches were broken off, and you, Gentiles, a wild olive shoot, were grafted in their place to share the rich root of the olive tree, do not boast over the branches. If you do boast, remember that it is not you that support the root, but the root that supports you. You will say, branches were broken off so that I might be grafted in. That is true. They were broken off because of their unbelief, but you stand only through faith. So do not become proud, but stand in awe. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I hope you got a little bit of what Paul was saying there. He was saying that some Jewish branches have fallen off this richly rooted tree that began with Abraham and has grown up over the centuries as the Jewish people. And you, the wild olive shoot, are being grafted in to share in that the rich nutrients that come through those roots. But don't boast about it. That doesn't give you any entitlements over anyone else. Romans is a tour de force about where true belonging comes from. And where does it come from? It comes from grace. Our belonging comes only and evermore, praise the Lord, through grace. It's always been that way for the Jews. Now, the Jews could forget that sometimes. Sometimes when we're the chosen people, we forget, oh, wait, yeah, this was all just because of God's grace in the first place. But the Gentiles are just beginning to learn this truth and this spiritual lesson. And so Paul and his scribes who help him write these letters, they just burned through quills and ink trying to emphasize this very point, this grace. Because when you're surrounded by an empire, when you're living in an empire, and especially when you are the beneficiaries and the primary beneficiaries of that empire, you are shaped by that empire's ideology, and it's easy to get sucked in to the ideology of the empire. You know, we're the best. We've got it figured out. Why wouldn't everyone else want to just be like us and be a part of this good thing that we have going on here? Are you listening to me? I'm talking about the Romans, but I'm not only talking about the Roman Empire. When you're in charge and you benefit from the structures that are the way they are, it's easy to fall into that ideology. And in an empire, belonging, then, is meted out based on someone's willingness to assimilate to the ways of that empire, the culture and the laws and the norms of that empire. It's meted out based on another person's willingness to acquiesce to the beliefs and the traditions and the ideologies of that empire. And another person's willingness to have obedience to our way, our greatness. In other words, belonging in an empire is earned. And now, this is not true of all Christians or all church movements throughout history, but a significant part of the church has been shaped by this empire ideology, and it was just given the name and the label of Jesus and Christian. So much of Christendom, which is what basically the Western Hemisphere became after the Emperor Constantine adopted Christianity as a religion of the Roman Empire, so much of Christendom was content to take on the name of Jesus, but not so keen to take up the cross of Christ. And so you even have this mythological scene, this scene of Constantine, who is leading his troops into battle, and he looks up into the sky and he sees this cross illuminated up there with the words, "In this conquer." And I mean, what more can we say about the marrying of the church, the name, the label of Jesus, and the symbols of Christ with the ideology of the Roman Empire? And so this is Christian belonging became more like that number two from the beginning of the message, the guy who just storms in and bursts in and puts his feet on the table and demands dinner. That's what Christian belonging became for centuries. Whether we're talking about the Holy Roman Empire or the British Empire, from colonization to enslavement, and we could just run down the list. I'll just give you a few examples of where we have like this sense of belonging run amok through the church. You know, it is from the very beginning, there is a deep history of anti-Semitism in the church. And we can see it even starting to bubble up in the letter to the Romans and in the early church. It is early on, and Paul is saying, it is so ridiculous that you would cut out the roots that give you life, and yet the church has blamed Jews for the death of Jesus and said, no, you're outsiders, we're the insiders now. We have things like the Spanish Inquisition, where people are going around literally deciding who belongs, who deserves to live based on what they believed and who they followed. You have priests who are selling indulgences as though the church has power over the length of our purgatory or the afterlife. And this is what Martin Luther, one of the things he protested back in the Protestant Reformation. And then, friends, we have the colonization of the New World. And this is just that guy bursting in the door and taking over to the nth degree, right? You have people who are trying to implant European culture on new lands, not the gospel, under the guise of the gospel, implanting their own culture. And we decided, European Christians, Western Christians decided, we belong here because we are the in crowd. We're the ones who believe in Jesus. We're the ones who are saved. And all you Native Americans, all you tribal peoples, get out of here if you're not willing to get on board and acquiesce and believe what we believe. Get out of here. That is a sense of belonging gone deeply awry of the way of Christ. Of course, we have the slave trade, which is saying, you know, you have to do what we say, but lucky you, we're telling you about heaven, so maybe you get to go there when you die, right? I mean, it's just absurd. And still today, it is absurd that we can just kind of draw lines, artificial lines on a map, and then decide who belongs and who doesn't. This is an overdeveloped sense of belonging that has nothing whatsoever to do with Jesus, but it has been a dominant form of how we've understood Christianity and what it means to belong to God over the centuries. It is a corrupted seed whose fruit is entitlement and exceptionalism. It's one branch of this is what Brené Brown, a researcher and writer, calls belonging based on common enemy intimacy. This is what she says. We've simply started hanging out with people who hate the same people we do. That's not connection. That's you're either with us or against us. That's common enemy intimacy. Common enemy intimacy is counterfeit connection and the opposite of true belonging. And too often, that's how we've defined ourselves at the church, as the church. We're the ones who have it right, and all the rest are heathens and pagans, and they can burn for all we care because we are the ones who truly belong to God. So the corrupted seed of false belonging and common enemy intimacy, whose fruit is entitlement and exceptionalism, is the opposite of the seed of true belonging, which is based on grace. And the fruit of true belonging is not entitlement and exceptionalism towards others and in and out, but a gratitude and a generosity towards other people, even if they don't believe or think or live the way you think they should. And so we have to then get back to the origin of our experience as Gentiles with Christianity. You know, in the New Testament, we have this image in Acts 15 of the Council of Jerusalem and a bunch of Jewish leaders, the apostles, deciding, what do we do with these Gentiles? And you almost get the picture of the Gentiles outside the meeting like, oh, I hope they let us in. Right? Willie James Jennings, Dr. Willie James Jennings is a professor, and he says that image of us kind of waiting outside and hoping to be let in, that Gentile experience, he says that should be Christianity. It's the feeling of being at the margins, but being brought in by love. But you always remember that you were at the margins, but you were brought in by love. Now, that sense of marginality is what Christians decided they did not want. We think from the margins, knowing we have been included by grace. Because we have ignored the way we entered, we have lost sight of our true power. It was not power over people, it was power for people. So in other words, he says, because we've forgotten as Gentiles that we were originally outsiders, you know, when you're an outsider and you're welcomed in, there's gratitude and there's like, oh, let's throw the doors open. If I can belong, anyone should be able to belong. He says, we've forgotten that. We don't like that feeling of being at the margins. And so what we've done is put ourselves at the center. And it's again, the opposite. He says, we need to get retuned in to that original experience of being the outsiders. This is what Paul writes in Ephesians 2. He says, so then remember that at one time you Gentiles by birth, called the uncircumcision by those who are called the circumcision, remember that you are at that time without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. That is a picture of being on the margins. Verse 13, but now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off, have been brought near by the blood of Christ, for he is our peace. If you have been far off and excluded and on the outside without God, man, if you are welcomed in, again, that is not exceptionalism. That's not entitlement. None of that has any place. It is just gratitude and generosity. Just a few verses before he says, for it is by grace that you have been saved through faith and not by works, so that no one should boast. And so, friends, counterintuitively, if we want to experience true belonging, then we need to get back to the margin experience. We need to remember in some way what it feels like to be on the outside, to not be at the center of everything, to not be the people in power and entitled to the beneficiaries of the empire. We need to remember that we don't belong because of our possessions, our status, our abilities to produce or fix or contribute or anything else, because then our inability or shifting status or loss of possession would separate us from that belonging. Our ultimate belonging is rooted in the grace of God and only the grace of God, the sure and faithful open arms of Jesus. Nothing can separate us then from the love of God. Why? Because of Jesus Christ, our Lord, crucified and risen, the one who went to the margins, who came and experienced poverty, who was a refugee, who lived among an occupied people, an oppressed minority within an empire, a greater empire, who was rejected by the religious and political establishments and died outside of the city of Jerusalem. Jesus was the one who went to the margins and welcomes us in from there with grace. It is by grace that we belong. And so let's start there. Let's start on the margins, remembering that we only belong to God through grace. And let's find then who else can we let know that they are welcome, that they belong in this love. You can do it when you walk around the neighborhood with a smile or maybe a conversation with someone you've never met before. You can do it on the internet. Heaven forbid that we would be welcoming and let people know they belong on the internet. You can do it with your political decisions and how you vote and how we think about ourselves and as a society and who we are as people. We are welcome outsiders in God's kingdom. We belong because of grace. And so, friends, let's throw open the doors. Let's sing praises and filled with gratitude, and let's experience and show generosity towards anyone with no holds barred and no limits to the generosity that we can show to others, because that is what God has shown to us in Jesus Christ. And so now we're going to try to practice this imagination from the margins and what that looks like for us as we approach the table. And what I would ask you to do is to close your eyes and to breathe deeply, as though you are breathing in the grace of God, which brings you life. And now with your eyes still closed, picture yourself outside a house. It's not your house. It's someone else's house. And you can see inside that there is a feast going on. You can tell it's warm in there while you're cold outside on the porch. There's a fire in the fireplace. There's laughter. There's a full meal spread, and you're sure the house is filled with aromas and joy. But you are not sure if you are welcome or that this feast is for you. And as you wait out in the cold, looking in on this feast, the doorknob begins to turn, and a warm light comes out the front door. And you see someone that you have never seen before. Maybe this person looks very different than anyone else that you know. But as he opens his arms to welcome you and beckon you in the house, you know that it is Jesus. Jesus welcomes you with open arms into the house. You enter in, and you can smell the aromas. You can taste the food. You are a part of the laughter and the joy. And you can linger there in this the gratitude of being welcomed in as long as you wish. You might even pause the video if you want to just sit with this image for a few minutes. Now, with your eyes still closed, you have been at this feast for a while now. You've been enjoying the food and drink and the company. But now you glance out the window and see someone on the other side, outside, on the porch where you were. And as you look, this is someone you recognize. It's someone you don't like. So take a moment to try and picture someone that stirs up anger or resentment in you. Picture their face outside the window looking in at the party. As you recognize their face out there, what is going on in your body? What are you feeling? What's going on in your mind? What are you thinking? What's going on in your heart? Linger in this moment for as long as you need to really notice the thoughts and the emotions and the embodied feelings that you're experiencing as you look out at this person that you don't like on the outside of this party. Now you see Jesus turn towards you. What does Jesus do? What do you do? And now, in this spirit, we approach the table, trusting that it's a table to which all are welcome through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ.